Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I think over the last couple of decades we've kind of taken for granted, well, people will want to come here, and we aren't out there hungry selling America and trying to attract new businesses into America.
We welcome the peaceful rise of China. It is in America's interests to see China succeed in lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. China can be a source of stability and help to underwrite international norms and codes of conduct. And
what?
So, you know, what we've done over the last 2 years is to try to develop a frank, consistent, open
international
relationship.
International norms of conduct.
China, and it's yielded considerable benefits.
Blue Monday.
So Obama's on the way to Bali. He needs another vacation. He and the missus and the mother-in-law need a vacation. After all, it's getting cold in Washington, and they've occupied the White House for quite a few months without traveling. And so now they're going to occupy Bali for a while. And on the road, the president says that America's been a little lazy, taking for granted that people will come to the U.S. Now, this is the most anti-business president in American history. And he has the nerve to say that the people are lazy and businessmen are lazy. That's number one. Then I couldn't believe my ears. He says that China could act as a normative force. In essence, we should now use China's methodology of dealing with its population as a norm for the rest of the world. Okay, here's the question to begin the show on the Savage Nation. Why does Obama attack America when he's in the third world? What is the psychological quirk in the president's thinking? What happened to him as a child that has made him into such an anti-American, America hater? Because every time he goes on the road, he attacks the country. This isn't the first time. There's been some studies on this. I started it a few years ago. I remember that in a very benign way. But people have actually dug things up that are frightening. I didn't know this. According to one journal, Obama's family tree is replete with the unbalanced. His maternal great-grandmother committed suicide. His grandfather, Stanley Dunham, was particularly unhinged, they write. He was expelled from high school for punching his principal, named his daughter Stanley because he wanted a boy, and exposed young Barry to drunken trash talk. Barack Sr. himself was an abusive alcoholic bigamist. And so we have to ask ourselves, I mean, what effect did all of this have on Barack Obama, the president himself? According to another website, Barack Obama, I'm quoting now, appears to be a narcissist. Narcissistic leaders are nefarious and their effects pernicious. They are subtle, refined, socially adept, manipulative, possessed of thespian skills and convincing. They lack empathy and are ruthless and relentless. Sounds familiar. But it's not his fault. They say that pathological narcissism is a reaction to prolonged abuse and trauma in early childhood or early adolescence. So what was the trauma in Mr. Obama's early childhood or adolescence? Well, let's look at this, because we're looking very carefully at Herman Cain's life and character, and yet the very same distinguished members of the American media who are quick to throw mud at Herman Cain based upon the talk of white trash with no validity whatsoever, have nothing to say about Obama's psychological deficits, which seem to reflect his hatred for America. Because the fact of the matter is, there are real problems here. Barack Obama's father, as you may know, deserted him and his mother at age two. His mother carted him off to Indonesia when he was a very young boy, put him into a madrasas, which is a Indonesian Muslim school. And then she divorced his stepfather. That's number two. She divorced two fathers. Then she got rid of Obama, the president, at age 10 to live with his grandparents in Hawaii, which included the grandfather Stanley, who named his own daughter Stanley because he wanted a boy. So, you know, you have a man who looks very stable, but the fact of the matter is you can see by his actions, his speeches, his words, that he may not be as stable as he pretends to be. And I think it's an important topic. Why does Obama attack America whenever he's in the third world? He seems to get comfortable around third world people, and he kind of gets like the in crowd. As long as they're not American, he starts telling them things about America that he doesn't like. It's astounding to me that he gets away with it. But then again, as I said to you, when the fourth estate becomes the, you know, not the fifth, you know what, not the fifth estate. What's the fifth one? Whoever gets that right gets a free copy of Abuse of Power. When the fourth estate, which should be the press, instead becomes the fifth column, there, I'll give myself a free copy of the book. We are in really bad trouble. Fifth column. We have fifth columnists in the press. And that is why we see Occupy movements all over America, to switch to yet another topic, when in fact, these are not glorious idealists in the streets. These are nothing but troublemaking leftists who want to destroy the core of our economic system and turn us into some third world hellhole based upon some outmoded concepts of communism, which have failed in every country in which they've been tried. And I can prove it in a few minutes when I show you who is behind the Oakland protests. His name is Siegel. His name is Siegel, and he quit today. And we have his picture up on michaelsavage.com. Finally, the cops were unleashed on the protesters and got rid of this riffraff. And it turns out that the legal advisor to the so-called mayor of Oakland, he has a name and a face. His name is Dan Siegel. Dan Siegel quit today as the chief legal advisor to the city of Oakland because he said the police raid of the Occupy Oakland camp was harsh. Now, Dan Siegel is a lifetime troublemaker in my estimation. You call him a civil rights attorney, I call him a troublemaker. You call him one of Oakland's most active and vocal police critics, I call him a pain in the neck who should have been thrown in jail for causing so much difficulty for the people of the city. This rat had the nerve to say this. By the way, the cops have been as polite as a policeman can be, given that they're being attacked on a regular basis by this riffraff, this drunken stone riffraff. Here's what he said. The city sent police to evict this camp, arrest people, and potentially hurt them, said the radical communist left-wing lawyer. He said, obviously, we're not on the same page. It's an amazing show of force to move tents from a public place. Okay. You know what I'd like to say to him. And then he goes on to attack the police. And he says, where else are they having 600 police officers take down some tents? Well, they try to get the riffraff drug addicts to remove the tents, but they wouldn't do it, old Siegel boy. Now, Siegel is what I call a red diaper doper baby. They are clearly the trouble in America. And there's a big difference, by the way, between civil rights and sedition. In my opinion, and I support civil rights, of course, being an outspoken individual, I need civil rights to survive. But the fact is that there's also sedition. Guys like him practice sedition on a regular basis, only they wrap it in the First Amendment. That's topic two. Topic three, 60 Minutes piece on Nancy Pelosi. The Nancy Pelosi story is an amazingly important story, which we are going to talk about today. What did Nancy Pelosi do, according to 60 Minutes? She and her husband invested in Visa stock. It went up $20 overnight, and there was pending legislation before her when she was Speaker of the House that never saw the light of day. She says there's no conflict. Anything you want to say about that? Any of you Nancy Pelosi supporters? And then finally today, in this first hour, I'm going to replay the Herman Cain interview from Friday, because it attracted so much attention, and yet it was played so late in the day that many of you who tune in during this segment of the show missed a very important interview with Herman Cain. And I think it's important for you to hear it, since that his campaign has basically been derailed to a certain extent by these lies from the gold diggers and lawyers of the type that I just mentioned in Oakland. Seditious left-wing rats, every one of them. If it was up to me, if I was J. Edgar Hoover, I'd call them in and I would pull their law license. I'd give them 60 days hard labor with a sledgehammer for what they've done to this country. But then again, I'm only a talk show host. Now, about Herman Cain, you know all of these allegations are completely made up. They were made up by gold diggers and their lawyers. You understand that. However, there were jokes going around, and one of them was created by a friend of mine, a friend who listens to the show whose name I will not tell you. He's actually a very deeply conservative person, but here's what he said. And it's a joke. Take it for what it is. You heard it nowhere else. You're going to hear it now on the Savage Nation. Are you ready? Listen to it. Where did Herman Cain get his 999 tax plan from? And here's the answer. He came on to a German woman, and she said, Herman, 999. I'll be right back.
Savage.
You know, we've been a little bit lazy, I think, over the last couple of decades. We've kind of taken for granted, well, people will want to come here, and we aren't out there hungry selling America and trying to attract new businesses into America.
How can you listen to a community organizer, a lifetime anti-business, anti-capitalist Marxist, going on the road talking about we haven't done enough to attract new businesses? How in the world can a president's supposed to be many things, commander-in-chief, but also America's best salesman. So let me ask you this. Do you think Obama is America's best salesman? How's that for a question? Unbelievable to me. And why does he put us down every time he goes somewhere? Why does he stab America in the back like this? It's very difficult for me to even do this because I'd rather support the president of the United States, Democrat or Republican, if I could. I find it very difficult to support this president because he seems to have America's worst interests at heart. Kevin in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. In answer to your question, you know, why does Obama speak that way to the third world? It's because, you know, the third world people, they see everything through the lens of historical grievance. And that not only explains why they hate people like Cain, who don't walk around with a big chip on their shoulder and actually have a scintilla of gratitude, but it also explains the bigger picture why they show no gratitude at all when we just built a democracy in Iraq. And my question also is, you know, what's going to happen, Michael, to the girls in Afghanistan when we leave? All the left wants to talk about is they want to blame Bush for putting 3 million girls in school there. But they never point out what's going to happen to them when we're gone.
Well, let's go back in time. Let's go back to the Vietnam War. Do I have to dig up again this pain? 52,000 boys lost their lives. God knows how many came back maimed. They won virtually every battle they ever fought, but they lost the battle on the streets because of the vermin in the media. Walter Cronkite was probably the biggest reason America left Vietnam with our tail between our legs. It was a disaster for this country, and I don't think we've ever recovered from it. Now, having said that, what happened in Vietnam after Henry Kissinger's duplicitous backstabbing Paris Peace Accord? Henry Kissinger should have been held up on war crimes for what he did. He told the South Vietnamese that the North was going to stop the shooting war. Well, soon thereafter, they invaded the South, and they killed over 1 million South Vietnamese in the most horrendous way. Men, women, and children were killed by the communists in Vietnam. Are you aware of that?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Well, guess what? The same thing is going to happen in Iraq and in Afghanistan. The same thing. Every time there's a social revolution that is corrupted, you see people die. Take a look at Hillary Clinton's and Barack Obama's Arab Spring. Why do you never hear from these rats in the media about the Christian churches burning and the Christians being killed who have been there for 1,000 years or more? Why? Because they don't want to look reality in the eye. Instead, they talk about Michael Jackson's doctor over and over again. Michael Jackson's doctor or some degenerate scum from Sunset Boulevard, whether he tripped over a hypodermic needle or not. It's sickening. The media is why America's dying. It's not the president. It's not Congress. It's the media. Because if we didn't have a media like this, we wouldn't have a president like that.
Thank you.
Okay. And I just lost my throat already for the week. I try not to lose my temper, but it's almost impossible to believe this. Is Obama America's best representative? Is Obama the best salesman America's ever seen? Why does Obama seem to attack Americans and America every time he leaves the country? Again, WOR in New York seems to be the only one calling. We'll go to OR. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, listen, Doc, it's good to hear you. Listen, I have two views of what's going on with Obama. Number one is I think that when he talks the way he does through his narcissistic view of himself in using the term we, he's really saying, see, it's not my fault. That, you know, the United States.
Well, he said America's been a little lazy. He didn't even say we. Play the clip again. I want you to hear what our president just said in Indonesia. Listen to, or in Honolulu, sorry, at the APEC Business Summit. Listen to this.
You know, we've been a little bit lazy, I think, over the last couple of decades.
We've kind
of taken for granted, well, people will want to come here, and we aren't out there hungry selling America. And
you're not hungry anymore. Why should you be hungry?
Yeah.
Should he be hungry when he lives with a woman who's the Lord of the Fries? I mean, who's hungry in the White House when you have the Lord of the Fries living there?
Listen, besides that, I think is in a way he's saying it is not his fault, honestly. But there's another part too. I think second.
Does he actually feel insecure underneath it all, and he has to prove himself?
I don't know if that's it. But he does try to ingratiate himself by doing this. You know, he knows he grew up hearing bad things about the U.S. in Indonesia.
Well, let's be clear. It's a very ugly picture. He had two fathers. They both ditched the mother, right? Both of them were third worlders, and both were Muslims. Is that a fact, or did I make any of that up?
So all this means, you know,
Wait. Both fathers were third worlders, and both were Muslims. Does that have an effect upon his thinking?
Oh, absolutely.
Or why are we not allowed to ask it? Every other day we hear the rats in the media talking about a Romney and his Mormonism, like that's a problem. They never ever talk about Obama and his Muslim problem.
Yeah. Listen, and Doc, just one last thing. I'm meaning to tell you this. Sometimes, and I'm listening to you, I love you because I compare you to, remember Gene Shepard from New York? The way you tell a story, like Gene Shepard used to on the radio, too, is captivating.
That's sort of a compliment, but truthfully, Gene's been gone a long time, right?
I know.
I don't even like to be compared to even great people because I think I'm more unique than he was.
Okay. Well, anyway.
No, I don't get defensive about it. I know it's a compliment, but, you know, comparisons can be very odious.
Okay.
I'm sending you a gift anyway. I'm sending you what? If you name it, you earn it. What are you getting?
Oh, abuse of power.
You almost didn't get it, but it's on the tip of your tongue because you meant to buy it, but you didn't buy it yet, right? Okay, I'm sending you a free copy of my new novel, Abuse of Power. It's still on the bestseller list. Now, I have a big treat for those of you who missed the interview with Herman Cain on Friday. Not the 999 joke that I told you in the last segment, but the actual interview where he disclosed something he had never disclosed before. The minute I come back, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Joining us now is Herman Cain, once again on the Savage Nation. Mr. Cain, it's a real honor.
Michael, you are a great friend, and I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, you know, your honesty and your character is shining through for reasons that I don't have to spell out. You're a very busy man. You've gone into the international spotlight. You're not doing much radio anymore, and I understand that you personally told your staffers you wanted to come on to the Savage Nation. Is that true?
That is absolutely true, and the reason is because you and your audience were so kind to me when I was on first. You didn't know that much about me. They didn't know that much about me. And I respect you as a patriot. I respect you as a professional. And I respect you as a man of integrity. And I said, yes, I wanted to be on Michael's show as soon as we could set it up.
That's beautiful. So let me ask you a blockbuster question.
Yes.
If someone else were chosen to run for the presidency, Mr. Cain, would you accept the VP slot?
It depends upon who's asking and the conditions under which they would like for me to do it. First, I would want to know clearly what my role would be. Secondly, if we are ideologically and idea-wise so far apart, I cannot do that because I believe the vice president should be a spokesperson for the president. For example, Mitt Romney, with all due respect, he has a 59-point economic growth plan that's got all kind of stuff in it. I don't agree with that. So right now, today, I could not be out there helping him promote his 59-point economic growth and jobs plan. I couldn't do that. I like him as a businessman. If he gets it, I am going to support him. But I have to work with someone that I could compliment, not someone that wants to put me in a role that I would not want to do.
That's interesting because, again, Herman Cain, going into the third person, answers as directly as possible, given that we didn't rehearse this question. It's astounding to me what kind of... No, I mean, your answers are straight up. It's as though you and I are talking in a restaurant over a pizza. I mean, over a pizza. I'm asking a real question. I'm getting a real answer instead of double talk and footwork. Okay, so let's go to the next question that came into my mind that I think is a very important one. given your background in mathematics and computer science, which I continue to boast about to people, you know, to this day, they don't know that you have a real degree in mathematics, a real degree in computer science, that you, Herman Cain, worked as a civilian employee of the Defense Department analyzing ballistics for the Defense Department. And when I read the elite snot noses on some of these shows are laughing at you and saying you're not smart, you know what I say to them on this show? Right. How come he can do things like that if he's not so smart? Most of these people couldn't do what you did in the military. I mean, for the military. So having said that, which cabinet post, let's say you're not picked for VP or president. God forbid, I wish you are. But let's say you're not. And someone says Herman Cain is so great, the people love him. We'd beg him to run a cabinet office for us. Which one do you think would fit for you?
Defense Department.
Yeah, I swear, I said that to my audience an hour ago. Mr. Cain, I swear to you, I said that.
And here's why, Michael. Here's why. I want to be in a position where I can make a difference, and now I would only accept it if the president asking me to do it would understand that, one, I don't want the product to be on cutting. I want it to be on investing. Two, I want to upgrade one of the things that I want to invest in is our ballistic missile defense capable Aegis warships, and I want to double that fleet. Why? The world is not safer. And so I want to build our military, not tear it down, because the world is not safer. So that would be the one that I could be excited about, to help the generals and the commanders on the ground to get what they need to do what they do best, and that is kick the you-know-what out of everybody in the world if something breaks out around in other parts of the world.
I felt that that would be, if in that position came around, that would be right. The number one selection, A, because of your mathematics background.
Yes.
And there's another reason. If I said it on the show, so I'll say it again, Mr. Cain. You probably didn't hear it. You were busy at another show or on a campaign trail. I said that if Mr. Cain walked amongst the troops as the Secretary of Defense, they would get a tingle up their spine because they would love him. They would love this man, and he would inspire confidence in the troops. I mean, this is the reality. So let's go to the next question. The other night there was a disaster for Mr. Perry. He drew a blank, which was embarrassing. There's no point making a joke of it.
Right.
Would you eliminate any departments if you were president, and which would they be, if any?
I wouldn't approach it that way. He's trying to identify three departments. Here's how I would approach it. I would do an across-the-board cut of 10% of every agency, except for defense. I will review that to see if we got the right priorities. Then each of my new cabinet heads, I would then ask them to find another 10% by doing a deep dive. You have to go into each department and find programs that are outdated, obsolete, or conflict with some of our other programs. Now, once we do that, some departments may be totally gone. But I don't want to make that judgment without looking down in the belly of each one of these. But I do believe we're going to find at least a 20% cut in total in that first year, because we're going to go at it the same way a businessman would go about cutting costs. So I would,
Herman Cain, you and I agree on, I mean, our minds work in a very similar manner, because just before you came on the show, I read my 37-point manifesto, my own, from my own book. And in that book, I didn't call for eliminating any departments. I said, cut them all across the board, because that's how a businessman would approach it.
Yes, that would be step one. Step two, do a deep dive. That means that you got to do the heavy lifting of saying, let's put every program on the table. What are the cost benefits of this program?
Mm-hmm.
If those cost benefits do not justify themselves, it is gone. That's how you go about doing that in business, and that's how we ought to be doing it in government. You know what, Michael? One of the reasons that, you know, each year the Government Accounting Office puts together a report identifying waste, fraud, abuse, duplication, and all that kind of stuff. They send it to Congress, and nothing ever happens. Why? Because if they are not trying to protect their pet program, they're trying to protect the pet programs of their friends. But guess what?
Mm-hmm.
I'll be a president with no friends, so I'm not going to try to protect anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make...
I know your time is extremely short, Mr. Cain, and I have this question. A lot of people ask, I said, what would you like to ask Mr. Cain? We had hundreds of people calling. The switchboards were jammed. One of the questions they all asked was about the UN. What would Herman Cain do with regard to the U.S. participation in the UN?
I would bring about an attitude adjustment with the United Nations. That means We are not going to compromise our sovereignty under any circumstances. Secondly, I would make sure that the UN understood that because we are the biggest contributor to the existence of the UN, we are going to change some of the rules that they use, you know, in terms of some of their practices. For example, I will not sit by and allow a pipsqueak potentate dictator to come to this country and insult our president. I don't care who it is. That makes absolutely no sense.
Mm-hmm.
We should be respected as a nation, even at the United Nations. And so I believe that there's a way to do that. In fact, I have talked to some people who have mm-hmm. suggested how we can do that. We need an attitude adjustment with the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say we want to get rid of it, but we need to have a change of attitude and change the way we deal with the United Nations. And the
I agree 100%, and I think that there could be a role for a UN if it was put in its yeah. place. And I think here comes the most important question, which is about jobs. Because people called and said, how would Herman Cain restore jobs in America? And we talked a bit about the exporting of jobs. We talked about Bill Clinton sending factories, letting China buy entire manufacturing facilities and bringing them to China. My answer was rather simplistic, but Donald Trump was on the show and agreed with the same principle. I said impose a tariff on goods from China. Now, do you have a position on this issue at this time?
Here's how I would bring jobs, keep jobs here. It starts with throwing out the current tax code because it is a mess. It works to our disadvantage. And this mm-hmm. is why I propose my 999 plan. Now, let's look at the first nine. This is where we level the playing field between U.S. manufactured goods, Chinese manufactured goods, to some extent, by the following. You take your sales as a business in the United States, and you're able to deduct purchases that you made from other U.S. companies. You're able to deduct capital expenditures. In other words, no depreciation. It costs you $500,000 to buy a new piece of equipment. You can deduct it. And mm-hmm. you can deduct net exports. In other words, you don't put embedded taxes into the cost of a car or a bicycle before you send it overseas. That makes our products much more competitive. We would be the most business-friendly country on the planet, Michael. This is how we deal with China, because then we'll be able to better compete against China and all of the other countries. As far as imposing tariffs, if we do my plan, we won't have to impose any special tariffs.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting and very intriguing. The issue of jobs, of course, is most important to most voters, and I think the bread and butter issue is the one that will launch someone into the presidency or keep that individual from arriving there. And the jobs. I mean, that's the number one issue. The unemployment is catastrophic right now, as you well know. I think it's related to all of the issues that you just mentioned. Is there any overall comment, Mr. Cain, that you would like to leave the Savage Nation audience with that would be significant in terms of your vision?
A Herman Cain presidency would first restore pride in being part of the greatest nation in the world. A Herman Cain presidency would put United back in the United States of America. Herman Cain would not try and divide us based upon class warfare. I will not divide us relative to race politics. I will unite us because it says United States of America. The other thing that Herman Cain will do, and I happen to believe that the power of my 999 plan is going to boost this economy, because we are going to remove this veil of uncertainty off of this economy so businesses can get excited about growing again. I'm about moving that shiny city on a hill that Reagan talked about back to the top of the hill where it belongs. And I will never be one to apologize for the greatness of this country. I have achieved my American dreams and then some. And I'm not doing this for me. I'm not doing this for the people who have already made it. I'm doing this for the children and the grandchildren.
And I believe every word you just said. Every word you just said is coming from you, from the honesty of Herman Cain. And you're the only candidate that I know of who's even talked about restoring the pride of America. It's the number one issue that's not being talked about, which is the collapse of the heart of America, because we've been beaten up so badly. And God in heaven, just the spirit, just lifting up the spirit would be enough to lift up the nation's economics. I'm sure you're right about that, and that's because you're a man of God. And I don't want to interject God into politics, but I know it's a big part in your life, and that's how you've been able to withstand the fires that you've been put through recently.
It is a big part, and the reason that I've been able to withstand those fires is because of my faith in God, my faith in myself, and my faith in this country. This is why I'm doing this, Michael, and I got to tell you, the encouragement that I get from people as I travel around this country, the encouragement that I get from the feedback that you get from your listeners, it basically says and reinforces every day the American people are sick and tired of politics as usual. That's why this businessman is appealing to them, because I'm not a politician. And the American spirit, that same American spirit, Michael, that started this country, that brought us through tough times, that same spirit has awakened here in this country. I don't care what you call it. Some people want to call it the Tea Party movement. I call it the citizen movement. And it is bigger, deeper, and more impactful than anybody thinks. The political class in Washington, D.C. is having nightmares because Herman Cain is doing so well. And that's because the American people have awakened and they are not going back to sleep.
Oh, I agree with you. And I said on my show, when you were here, Cain is able. And I thought that was a good, catchy phrase. And somebody's been running those ads on my website, paying for them, because it's a heck of a phrase and it's turning out to be true. One other note, Mr. Cain, despite what people are rumoring, I will not accept the chairmanship of the FCC when you're president.
Well, would you be press secretary for a week?
I would be press secretary for you for one day only. That's the first day. That's only the first day of your office. I would only agree to it for one day. I could never take it for more than that.
I may take you up on that offer, because between you and Boyce, I want you to shake them up and give them a new attitude adjustment.
Oh, would I shake up the press if they were ever in my room? You know, Mr. Cain, you remember the comedian Jimmy Durante many, many years ago, back in the 50s?
Yes,
I'm going to leave. The listeners and you with one thought, because this one is great. Jimmy Durante said, "You better be nice to all of them on the way up. You better be nice to all the people you meet on the way up, because you'll meet them all on the way down."
He's so right. He was so right. Michael, as always, enjoyed it, my friend.
Thank you very much, and God bless you. Good luck with the run. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation to take your calls and comments right here.
Savage.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her husband have participated in at least 8 IPOs. One of those came in 2008 from Visa, just as a troublesome piece of legislation that would have hurt credit card companies began making its way through the House. Undisturbed by a potential conflict of interest, the Pelosis purchased 5,000 shares of Visa at the initial price of $44. 2 days later, it was trading at $64. The credit card legislation never made it to the floor of the House.
Well, that's a shocking story in two regards. One, it's shocking that the Speaker of the House would do such a thing and get away with it. The second shock is that 60 Minutes would run it. Now, we had heard that this story was ready to go last week, and I suspected that all the powers that can be brought upon a network were brought upon CBS. I am shocked that CBS overrode the powers of Nancy Pelosi and ran that story. Now, to be very, very frank and fair, she was not the only one singled out. She was actually third in line in the stories. They made Boehner a bigger story than her, even though it wasn't, and another Republican. They try to cover it up and make it look like a universal problem, which it is. Incidentally, I was amazed. I haven't watched 60 Minutes in 10 years, but I watched it last night. I was shocked to learn that if you got information from a cousin and you made money on it, let's say insider trading, you'd go to jail, right? It's called insider trading. It's illegal. Those rules don't apply to members of Congress. Congressmen, senators, speakers are immune from the same laws that we are prosecuted for with regard to insider trading. I was stunned to learn that the so-called lawmakers are all lawbreakers. The lawbreakers wrote laws which render them immune from any scrutiny or any prosecution for insider trading. That's the biggest story of the Nancy Pelosi visa scandal, incidentally. I'm shocked by it. I'm stunned we're living in a country that is more corrupt than Uruguay. It looks like it's more corrupt than Uruguay was 30 years ago, which is why we're broke. We're broke. Why are we broke? Because we have lawbreakers writing the laws. Jeff in New York on WOR. Am I wrong or right?
Dr. Savage, I don't think anybody's surprised that Nancy Pelosi got her hand, she was caught with her hand in the cookie jar, but what's up with 60 Minutes going, doing a hit piece on her? I understand that the other people got caught too, but still, why would they turn on her? That's the bigger story.
I'll tell you why, because the midstream media has lost all credibility with the majority of thinking Americans, and they know it. Their ratings are in the garbage can. They need to save a scintilla of their audience and a scintilla of their own self-respect. And I think there's a limit to how far some of the old line journalists will go in terms of being gelded. So a guy like this reporter who did it, remember, it wasn't done by any, it was done by a specific reporter at 60 Minutes. Am I right? Yeah. So what I'm getting at is that maybe he has finally, in the last years of his career, maybe Steve Croft has finally come to understand that the corruption is so phenomenal that he has to do something. Is it possible that one man's conscience at CBS finally broke out of the lock grip they put it in? 800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So we have three stories in the air right now. We have the Nancy Pelosi visa story. We have the insider trading permitted for members of Congress. We have Barack Hussein Obama on the road attacking America, saying that we're lazy. He's the most anti-business president in history, and he's saying we're lazy. It's amazing to me. But the worst part was him saying about the peaceful rise of China, when anyone who has been watching China knows that it's not peaceful. China today is exactly where Japan was in the 1930s. And God protect us all if we ever go to war with China. This is never going to be good for anybody. But they're getting ready for war.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her husband have participated in at least 8 IPOs. One of those came in 2008 from Visa, just as a troublesome piece of legislation that would have hurt credit card companies began making its way through the House. Undisturbed by a potential conflict of interest, the Pelosis purchased 5,000 shares of Visa at the initial price of $44. 2 days later, it was trading at $64. The credit card legislation never made it to the floor of the House.
I wanted to ask you why you and your husband, back in March of 2008, accepted and participated in a very large IPO deal from Visa. At a time, there was major legislation affecting the credit card companies making its way through the House. And did you consider that to be a conflict of interest?
I don't know what your point is of your question. Is there some point that you want to make with that? The fact is, your basic premise is a false one.
Well, okay, so Nancy Pelosi tried to say that it didn't matter that there was insider trading or she didn't engage in it, but the fact is she did, according to 60 Minutes, and so do others in Congress. Some do and some don't, but many of them do, and they're immune to the insider trading restrictions that you and I have to face. As I told you, if you have a brother-in-law working for a company or a distant cousin, and he hears something's going to go on, and he tips you the stock's going to go up or down, and you invest in it, and you make or lose money, you go to jail if you get caught. Congress does this on a daily basis. In fact, they trade in this information. So the lawmakers have become lawbreakers with regard to insider trading. God knows with regard to anything else what they're doing to us. And that leads us to the next question and the question after that. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. If you're listening to me in America, you probably heard me replay the Herman Cain interview at the bottom of the last hour. In New York, however, on WOR, you missed most of it. You can get the interview with Herman Cain on michaelsavage.com. The entire interview has been put up on my website. If you'd like to hear the whole thing, that's where it is. So let's go to the callers around America on these topics. There are many topics that are frankly upsetting people, the biggest one being that the lawmakers have become lawbreakers. Okay, it's that simple. Then we had Obama in Honolulu at the APEC Business Summit saying America's lazy. Here is the most anti-business president in American history, a lifetime anti-capitalist, let's be clear. His mother was an anti-capitalist. His fathers were anti-capitalists. And he sat in the church with Jeremiah Wright for 20 years that espoused anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism. And now we're supposed to believe he doesn't really have sympathy with the anti-capitalist mood of the Occupy movement, which he, of course, and George Soros is behind. We know that, are behind. Okay? Let's go to the callers right now. Let's go to William in Sacramento. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I heard the rebroadcast of the Herman Cain interview, and he has my vote now. I mean, the guy just seems so authentic. He's a businessman.
He is authentic, but notice what the media has done to him. They're telling us that the White Wall retread, Newt Gingrich, is on top. Now, why do you think the mainstream media, such as CNN, would want Newt on top? Why do you think so?
Because he had the problem with his wives and things like that, and they're going to.
No. The reason that the midstream liberal media would want Newt to run against Obama is because Obama would beat Newt by 30 points.
Well, yeah, because it'll be the white Republican, male.
That's right. The stereotype: big, fat, old white Republican versus young, slim black who's been picked on.
Right. Exactly.
Now here's a CNN ORC international poll. What the heck is an ORC international poll that says Cain is down? Look, I have a PhD, which includes one segment in epidemiology. I can read data. CNN has absolutely zero validity. CNN today has zero validity, less validity, by the way, than does the disgraced Gallup poll, which was also biased. You look up CNN ORC international poll and see who it is. I don't have the time to tell you that. But a new national survey of Republicans. Incident, it's a tie between Romney and Gingrich. And according to Cain, he's been collapsed because of the fake sexual harassment allegations created by the white trash. It's all a lie. It's a total lie. They want Cain out of the way. You know that.
But they keep repeating and repeating it so people believe it. That's what it bothers.
That's right. Now, where did we hear in history, if you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth? Who first said that?
One of Hitler's henchmen, right?
That's right. Hitler's press secretary, his master of propaganda, stated that if you tell a big lie often enough, it becomes the truth. Right now, the Hitlerian methodology is being inflicted upon Herman Cain because the vermin in the media want a competition between Obama, not with Cain, but Obama versus Romney, or better yet, Obama versus the fat old white man. See, Romney is good-looking and it looks presidential, right? We all agree to that.
Right.
Gingrich, on the other hand, is exactly the stereotype that they would like all white men to be. Now, if it was just based on his looks, I wouldn't be saying it, but Gingrich is a disaster as a presidential candidate. A disaster.
Not on paper, but with their stereotyping, yes.
Look, let's be clear. Gingrich has a very fine mind, and he's written some very good things over the years. But Gingrich will lose by 30 points if they put him up against Obama. Do you agree with that?
100%. Because of the
okay, period. So that's why they want him to be on top of Cain. Because Cain would beat, probably in my estimation, if the authentic Cain faces the inauthentic Obama, Cain wins by 15 points. That would be a guess. It's my guess. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Why do you think Obama attacks America every time he leaves the country? Why does he feel he has to do this? Does anyone have an answer for this? in Florida. John, what's your answer to that? Why does he attack America like this?
I think he attacks it. He's only surrounded himself, Doctor, by people in academia, college professors that work 2 or 3 hours a week for 2 or 3 classes. He's a community organizer that those people are unhappy about life, and they don't work. As an entrepreneur and have doing it for 25 years, I didn't even have community organizer in my vocabulary till he became, a president-elect.
Well, community organizer was well known in communist China. Okay, that's where community organizers existed in great numbers. Community organizers were basically block captains for the Communist Party of China. Community organizers were well known in the Communist Party USA. So I'm sorry to tell you that's the origin of the word community organizer. I suppose NYU probably has a master's degree in community organizing, and that some of the people in the Occupy movement got a degree in that, which is why they're unhappy, because they can't get a job.
Right. And
now this just came out. The vermin in the Occupy movement are going to try to close down the actual Wall Street on Thursday. So-called protesters, all rabble, hope to shut down Wall Street, home of the New York Stock Exchange, on Thursday by holding a so-called street carnival to mark the two-month anniversary of their campaign against capitalism. How do you feel about that? Do you think the police should let that happen?
No way. Those police should step in and do their job. As an entrepreneur who I never went to college. I started a business right out of high school, actually building electric vehicles, and I have been doing it for 25 years. And when I see these people going to college, getting $45,000 a year loans, having their parents have to work 2 jobs to pay the kid, and the kid goes for some loser degree, can't get a job. When he realizes he can't get a job, he goes back into the university system and tries to get a PhD in that degree.
Right. It's a sensitive topic for me, but it's not true with me, because I worked my entire life to get my 2 master's degrees and my real PhD. But the fact of the matter is, when I could not get a teaching job, it wasn't because I wasn't the brilliant genius in my field. It was because I was unfortunately the wrong race and the wrong sex.
Exactly.
But in their case, you're right. They come out with degrees in juggling. There's actually a case of a kid who got a master's degree in juggling from one of the superb SUNY institutions. And he's one of the protesters because he couldn't get a teaching job in juggling. Can you believe us?
Doctor, I think we should do 2 things. I think we should put a camera in every college classroom.
Oh, my God. What a great idea. Well, we have cameras in police cars because of alleged police brutality. Why not put cameras in college classrooms because of the communism and the brainwashing?
Exactly.
What a show that would be. You talk about a reality show. That would be better than the Real Housewives of, since none of them are real, and they don't even live there.
Yeah, and I'd like every CEO to sign a mandate that they'll never hire this president to do a speaking engagement and give him a dime, because he doesn't know almost anything about anything.
He knows nothing about business. The man has never created a product or a service that anyone's ever needed other than community organizing.
Exactly.
All right, thanks for the call. I'll be right back. Now, I just, I read you some breaking news. The communist rats in the Occupy Wall Street movement, who are all ne'er-do-wells, they're all troublemakers, they're all hardcore communists surrounded by useful idiots, are claiming they're going to close down the actual Wall Street on Thursday. Now, you know my feelings on this, and you know that if we had a real government, this wouldn't happen. The police could stop them, but the National Guard could be called out as well, as they should have been in Oakland, California, a long time ago. But the police did a very good job. Now, you think that these are nice people, right? You think these are just college kids. You don't have any idea who these Occupy Wall Street are. I have right now just found their list of Occupy Wall Street demands. It was published on October 23rd, 2011. 1, repeal the Taft-Hartley Act, unionize all workers in America immediately. Raise the minimum wage immediately to $18 an hour. Create a maximum wage of $90 an hour to eliminate inequality. Institute a 6-hour workday and 6 weeks of paid vacation. Institute a moratorium on all foreclosures and layoffs immediately. Repeal racist and xenophobic English-only laws. Open the borders to all immigrants, legal or illegal. offer immediate, unconditional amnesty to all undocumented residents of the U.S. Create a single-payer universal health care system. Institute a negative income tax and tax the very rich at rates up to 90%. Pass stricter environmental protection and animal rights laws. Allow workers to elect their supervisors. Lower the retirement age to 55. Increase Social Security benefits. Create another 5% annual wealth tax for the very rich. You ready for the next one? You idiots, you, what you created in these monsters. You idiots who sent your children to all of these stupid colleges. Ban the private ownership of land. Shall I repeat that, you morons, you? All of you rich, stupid people in these big cities, you created these idiots who are laying there in the gutter. Ban the private ownership of land. It gets even uglier. Here's what else Occupy Wall Street stands for behind the imagery. Make homeschooling illegal. Religious fanatics use it to feed their children propaganda. Reduce the age of the majority to 16. Abolish the death penalty and life in prison. We call for the immediate release of all death row inmates from death row and transfer to regular prisons. Release all political prisoners immediately. Abolish the debt limit. Ban private gun ownership. Strengthen the separation of church and state. Debt forgiveness for all debts in the United States of America. End the war on drugs. That's the Occupy Wall Street movement that Mayor Bloomberg coddles. That's the Occupy Wall Street movement that Governor Cuomo ignores. That's the Occupy Wall Street movement that must be snuffed immediately before this country is broken. Did you hear what I just said to you? Are you that stupid out there that you don't know what you're facing? This is a list of OWS demands. I didn't make up one word. This is an official statement of the Occupy Wall Street, a communist rabble that have taken over the city for too long. They're doing it in many cities across America. And the poor police have to face these rats without wading into them with nightsticks because they're all flashing cell phone pictures at them, calling for police brutality after they cut police with knives. Here in San Francisco, two police were cut with razors, slashed with razors by the little rats who ran back inside the crowd. This is the world you want to live in? They should all be arrested immediately. That tent's burned. And they should be put into a work camp for 60 days. Teach them a lesson. Without civility, there's no civil rights. Without civility, there's no civil and there's no rights. Without civil order, there's no civility whatsoever. If you do not stop them now, this is going to spread like the virus it is. If you missed some of the proposed list of demands, you can see them on my website. Las Vegas, Debbie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much for putting me on tonight, Dr. Savage. I want to let you know that last Friday night, I am a truck driver out here in Las Vegas. I haul decorative rock. I park my truck. I get in my little pickup truck. I go to the store. And now, all of a sudden, I hear this interview with Herman Cain. And I thought, oh, my God, I can't go do my shopping now. I have to listen to this. And I only caught, like, you know, you were already into it. And I thought, oh, darn it, I wish I could have caught the first part. So yeah. God bless you. Thank you so much for playing it again tonight. And I want you to know something. I went home. I make half the wage that I used to make driving a truck. And I went home Friday night, and I donated $100. That's all I can afford right now to Herman Cain's.
Isn't that amazing? You talk about a grassroots campaign. Well, this is why the media is smearing him, because they don't want him facing the inauthentic Obama. If you put the authentic Cain against the inauthentic Obama, who wins that race?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a gift because you gave Herman Cain a donation. I'm sending you a copy of what?
Abuse of Power.
Aha, it's on your lips, but you couldn't afford it. A beautiful hardcover copy is going out to you. It's one of the few remaining first printing copies of the book available, and they're going to go to a second printing shortly, but I want to make sure people who buy it before they do run out, so I'm sending you a free copy. This is amazing. I read to you the demands of the Occupy Wall Street communists, and you think that they're just benign kids who are out of work? Did you hear what I said to you? Did any of you hear what I read to you? I didn't make it up. I just posted it on michaelsavage.com. America cannot afford to even engage in this rhetoric unless you want to become something worse than Greece. Would you like to see Greece, but Greece burning? Because that's what we'll become if you follow this.
Savage.
You know, we've been a little bit lazy, I think, over the last couple of decades. We've kind of taken for granted, well, people will want to come here, and we are
in the imperial we. He's talking about America as being lazy. When in fact, okay, that's enough. It's enough. It's enough. It's painful. It's painful to listen to the president of the United States putting us down every time he goes over out of the country. All right, he's in Hawaii, which is allegedly part of America. And why would he do this at the APEC business summit? Why would he put us down? What do you mean we've been lazy, taking for granted that people will come to the U.S.? Americans must sell America? The president should be selling America on his road trip. He should be telling people why they should come here, why should they invest in America, instead of saying that we've been lazy. And this goes on every time he travels. David in Tucson, your opinion, please. Go ahead on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. Good to hear from you. I am completely appalled by our president going out there and telling us that we are the lazy ones, that American business owners are the lazy ones. I've just recently started a business. I'm a fashion designer, and I just cannot believe that he has the gall to go out and say this.
Yeah, it is outright. No, it is. It's insulting to every small business person in America, and how he gets away with it is a matter of fact by now. When we read that Chelsea Clinton, who has no right to be hired by NBC, it's an embarrassment to hire a former president's daughter for a major news outlet. It's so naked, such nepotism. It's frightening. It's something that you would see in a banana republic. You understand how Obama gets away with this. It's the government media complex at work, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have been completely blinded by the propaganda. But now I really think the American public is waking up, and he's still.
But why do we permit these Occupy communists to disrupt the cities of America and to give our police such a difficult life? Why? Why do we permit it? Why don't we demand more out of Mayor Bloomberg? Or why don't we demand more out of Governor Brown in California, who should have called out the National Guard? Why don't we demand that Governor Cuomo call out the National Guard and clean the streets of these rats?
I don't know. That does indeed.
Why? The government media complex, because they actually sympathize with the proposed list of OWS demands. Did you hear any of them, which I read in the last segment?
Oh, that was another thing that got me fired up. The occupied ultimatum, pretty much.
Yes. Yeah. Could you believe what they're demanding?
I'm sorry?
Could you believe the kind of things they're demanding on their website?
These people are so anti-profit and anti-capitalist. I honestly think that what we need to do is we need to see how well they would do if they had no money at all. Just no money.
But the point is this: they're entitled to their opinion, but they're not entitled to block the streets and prevent the average person from going to and from their workplace, to and from a hospital, to and from a place of worship. It's a violation of the civil rights of the average person in the city. And if we have laws and we have order and we have a leadership, for example, Mayor Bloomberg, who is absolutely not a leader, he wouldn't have permitted this from day one. But he is kowtowing to them.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what can you do? You've heard this? End the war on drugs? Debt forgiveness for all? Ban private gun ownership? Abolish all debts in America? Release all political prisoners immediately? Abolish the death penalty and life in prison? Reduce the age of the majority to 16? Make homeschooling illegal? Religious fanatics use it to feed their children propaganda? Can you believe this? Ban the private ownership of land? Create a 5% annual wealth tax for the very rich, lower the retirement age to 55, pass far stricter environmental protection and animal rights laws, tax the rich at rates up to 90%, create a single-payer universal health care system. This could be Obama's campaign strategy. You know, the more I read this, the more I realize it's not too dissimilar from the Democrat Party. In so many ways, it's almost identical to their platform. This is exactly why this is so dangerous, and this is why they're not operating in a vacuum. The Occupy movements are really an offshoot of the Democrat Party, so far as I can tell. The unions, for example, have supported the Occupy movements. That is why the number one demand of the OS, Occupy WS movement, is this. Repeal the Taft-Hartley Act, unionize all workers in America immediately. All workers, whether they want to be unionized or not. So you have to understand, Democrat Party, unions, and the vermin in the gutters are all one and the same. They're all one and the same. It's one seamless enterprise of terror. These are street terrorists who are working for the Obama administration in one way or another. Now, why do you think the vermin in the media are pushing Gingrich and trying to tell you that Cain has dropped in the polls? It's a fake poll put out by the salacious CNN, a worthless organization to begin with. But they put out a false poll on Cain saying that Gingrich has risen because they know Gingrich would be beaten by 30 points if he runs against Obama. They're dying to get a fat old white man like him, a retread white wall tire like Gingrich they want running up against Obama. But if you put an authentic black man like Cain up against the creation called Obama, who do you think wins? I mean, come on, let's be real here. Let's stop mincing words here and stop worrying about what people over your shoulder might think. Obama is an inauthentic creation of the leftist media and of the leftist political forces in this country. Cain is a real man who pulled himself up by his bootstraps. He's authentic. That's why people are resonating, why he's resonating with the people. And that's why they're pushing this lie that he's moving ahead, whatever his name is. What's his name? Gingrich. New York City, WOR, Jack, welcome. Thanks for listening. What's on your mind?
Jack, this is Jack from New York. I have on my mind, Dr. Savage, as follows. The United States of America has failed to identify the real enemy. The real enemy is the Iran regime. The Iranians are fighting wars all over the world. Let's face the facts, and let's...
Well, now let's talk about international politics rather than national and local. Internationally, Iran has tried to spread the Islamic Revolution across the globe. That is true. That's a fact that nobody would deny who studied this. They have funded anti-American and anti-Western movements and such ever since of the Islamic Revolution brought about by Jimmy Carter.
And I was just going to get to that, that Jimmy Carter is the exact thing that happened with Carter, the same thing. We have no power. We're being swept under the rug, and we're playing second.
Well, let me explain what you said so people understand we're not just being flippant here. Jimmy Carter undermined the Shah of Iran. Jimmy Carter undercut the Shah of Iran to the extent that the Shah of Iran had to flee in exile. And then the radical Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been in exile in London or Paris, came back to Iran, instituted these draconian 15th century rules in Iran, and brought the country back 300-400 years, instituted nightmares for the average educated Iranian people. They're a beautiful, wonderful people. One of the most advanced civilizations on earth was Persia. And here this man throws them back 300-400 years. And then they instituted the Islamic Revolution around the world, all because of Jimmy Carter. Obama's doing the same thing in his own way.
Okay, I agree with all that you said, sir. And what I'm trying to say to you is that right now we're on the brink of a country having nuclear weapons, and they're saying they would use them if they had them. Maybe I'm not 100% correct on the word that I just used, but they have threatened, and they will... And where do we stand?
They have said they want to wipe Israel off the map. Yes, they want to wipe the little Satan off the map. And then they will get to the big Satan. In other words, until the entire world is praying towards Mecca, the world will not be a safe world. That's exactly right.
Okay, and you said before we lost 50,000 soldiers in Vietnam. A nuclear holocaust is 300,000-400,000. What is this world, sleeping? Why isn't there a coalition? Let these people that go to college, and you're talking about they're sitting on the vermin and all the, let them write literature and lobby the world to see what's going on and to wake up and smell the...
These rats in the gutters in the Occupy movement probably support Iran. They are so deranged from all of the marijuana and from all of the nutritional deficiencies of their entire life, the extreme vegetarianism, the marijuana, has made them mentally incompetent, where they would actually support their enemies who would throw them down a well and cover it over with cement.
And that's what
but let's go to the Iranian threat for a moment. This is an esoteric question for two reasons. What can we do about it?
Excuse me?
What can we do about it?
The way to do it is for the world, the United Nations, to rally and put the pressure like we did on Saddam Hussein. The same exact thing has to be a blitz on all of the country, including Russia and China getting on board and putting an end to this mental.
So then get 1,000 people and get 1,000 people and go protest outside the UN. Maybe they could put down their. Well, I won't finish the sentence because I have contempt for the United Nations. I have contempt because I used to work near the UN, and I saw those fraudulent diplomats when I was a young, starving teacher. They would come out at night. They'd get into limousines. They would have the call girls waiting for them. They'd be drinking, these warlords from all over the world. I know who they are. They don't impress me at all. It's gotten worse, not better. It's gotten much worse, not better. So what are you going to do, sit here and listen to this? You're going to get angry now? You're going to say that I shouldn't be saying this stuff? You want to talk about stars and starlets and what movie they're in? I can't get too involved with it. I'm not that interested in that stuff. I'm not interested in sports. I've always had a because of the Sandusky scandal, it almost confirms all of my anti-sports instincts. I don't know, the coach, I don't want to go into it. Not all coaches are like Sandusky any more than not all priests are like the molester priests. Okay, I understand that. It's a very small percentage. But there's an undercurrent of Sandusky-like behavior in a lot of athletics. Can I say that without ruffling your feathers a little too much? I know many of you like my show and you're sports fanatics. Okay, I'm not going to change your mindset. But there's a little bit of the Sandusky in a lot of the sports things. I don't know how to explain it more than that. So that story is horrible, the Penn State story. Truthfully, it's beyond belief. There's a I actually read the grand jury presentment against Sandusky. I got sick over the weekend. I found it and downloaded it. I posted it on my website. And I don't want to even tell you to go look at it, and you will anyway now that I tell you not to. But you can't believe what this man is accused of doing to young boys. And I'm not going to repeat it, obviously, because I don't want to repeat it. I'm going to tell you what happened to one of the men who saw him allegedly do this. I want to find this because the presentment's very important that you know where it is now. I don't know where it got moved on the website. There was a janitor who was a Korean War veteran, a simple man, a humble man who was a janitor in the school. Is it still on my web? Here it is. Warning, graphic details of Sandusky grand jury presentment. It's about on the right side, halfway down, under a Kane ad, next to Pelosi using position for legal insider trading, okay? Now, Sandusky, who had access to hundreds of boys at Penn State, you know all that, so I don't have to even mention it to you, right? Here's the part that shook me up a lot. Toward the end of the grand jury presentment, they talk about a guy who was a janitor in the locker room late at night. One night, he comes in and he hears a slapping sound in the showers. And he doesn't know what it is. He puts down his mop and he looks in and he sees Sandusky raping a 7-year-old boy, period. He got so sick that he ran to another janitor and told him what he saw Sandusky doing. And then this poor man said he had a nervous breakdown. They were afraid he was going to have a heart attack from what he had just seen. He was sitting there mumbling, according to this grand jury testimony. He was saying, I've been in the Korean War. I've seen men with their guts blown out. I've seen men with their arms shot off, but I've never seen a man do this to a boy. He got so sick, they called an ambulance for the janitor because they thought the janitor would have a heart attack from witnessing what Sandusky was allegedly doing to this little boy. Now, ask yourself a question. Why were the police not called? These humble janitors went to their next level, went to the next level, went to the next level, and the police were not called in until years later, allegedly. So you say, well, where is this janitor today? Why doesn't he testify? Well, the grand jury presentment indicates that he is now in an old age home and he has dementia and he cannot be a good witness. Can you believe this? Well, it's all there for you to read on michaelsavage.com. And again, it's the middle of the page under the Kane ad, warning graphic details of Sandusky grand jury presentment. It's horrible. It's not even believable that a man could do this and get away with it. Where were the police? And why? Who was the prosecutor who prosecuted him disappeared? This is shocking. I'll be back.
Savage.
We've been running with four questions or topics on the show today, maybe five. Why does Obama attack America when he somehow leaves the mainland? Let's put it that way. Two, the 60 Minutes piece about Pelosi and others in Congress engaging on a regular basis in insider trading because it's legal for them to do so and illegal for you to do so. We reran the Herman Cain interview. Many of you heard it and you loved it. And then we touched upon the actual insane demands, which are all out of the Communist Manifesto, by the delusional creeps in the Occupy Wall Street movement. And we're asking why the governors and the mayors of major cities are permitting these communists to get away with this and disrupt cities. The answer is because they actually agree with them. It is their campaign strategy. It is fundamentally the platform for Obama in the next election. About 80% of what the OWS people call for is what Obama would like to see instituted in America. But you don't even understand how far to the left he really is. Obama is so far out of the mainstream of America that it's calculable. You can't even find it on the meter. There's never been an American politician this far to the left who's gotten this high in office, obviously. I don't even think there's been a U.S. senator this far to the left of the average American, let alone a president. So you have to ask yourself why they're pushing Newt Gingrich and pushing down Kaine. Why are they inventing lies about Kaine? And why are they telling you with fake polls that Gingrich is surging? The answer is very clear. Yakima, Washington. Bobby, you know the answer. Why?
Yeah, Michael, it's just like it's deja vu. They pushed McCain because they knew he was the best person to run against Obama. They're doing exactly the same thing. The media is the 21st century version of Joseph Goebbels' propaganda machine in Nazi Germany.
It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening for them to be doing this to Kaine, smearing him and putting out false polls saying that Gingrich is surging.
You know, Michael, there are so many people that are of voting age today that, you know, were preteens when Gingrich was Speaker of the House. And all of those things that they just, you know, he was a bullet catcher back then for negative propaganda, and they're just going to dredge all of that up. The other thing.
You're saying that Gingrich is a good whipping boy for a couple of reasons for the media. It's a dream to have him run against Obama so they can beat him up. But also, remember, image-wise, image. We live in an age of image. We know that since the 50s, since the advertising age really hit. And we know that a lot of it is style, not substance, so it almost doesn't matter what people stand for. It's how they present themselves and how they look. Gingrich is a very unattractive candidate in that he represents, unfortunately, an over-the-hill fat white man. Is that right?
Exactly.
So they want to have him on the stage next to the tall, elegant Obama. They know that the average person is so stupid they'll vote for Obama based on looks alone.
The substance level, I mean, that Obama got elected is just...
Well, that's right. Obama's a very appealing candidate. He's good-looking and he speaks very well. However, we've come to understand that his politics are so out of the ken of the average American that they can't even calculate it. But let's say now, instead, we saw Kaine versus Obama. Do you agree with me that Kaine would win?
Oh, hands down. Well, Kaine would just tear him up. I mean, he'd probably wet his pants, Obama would, if he had to go up against...
Right. So Obama, who got many foolish voters to think that he really represented hope and change, would no longer have them. And Kaine is sort of like the Ross Perot-ish kind of guy. Let's roll up our sleeves and look under the hood and fix the engine. Am I right?
Correct.
And coupled with that, Kaine is also a self-made businessman. Kaine is also a man who could pull away, I don't know what percent of the black vote. Let's say he pulls away 20% of the black vote from Obama. That would be catastrophic since Obama's base depends upon the black vote amongst other ethnic groups. Am I right about that?
Right, and plus, you know, guilty white people. There are so many people that feel
right.
Guilty.
The guilty whites who voted for Obama might vote for Kaine. But on the other side of the quotient, there are white people who would not vote for Kaine because he's black, and that's a truth. That's absolutely true.
There
are many confounding variables in here that we have to look at. But for them to be putting out fake international polls saying that Kaine is finished and Gingrich is surging is outrageous. It's absurd. It is absolutely not true. I'm sending you a free gift. What's the title?
Abuse of Power.
You get a free book for the holidays, a nice turkey stuffer. Well, listen more on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's some amazing stories out there, including this. We're learning from the liberals now, quote, patriotic lawmakers to swarm Washington's hall of power and demand to lawmakers tax me. Apparently, Grover Norquist, who I've doubted for a long time, is behind this, or it looks like he is. So-called patriotic millionaires are to testify at a hearing held by Communist Caucus, well, they call it Progressive Caucus, saying, kill any bill without tax increases on income over $1 million per year. Can you believe this? We don't know who these patriotic millionaires are, but apparently they would include, I guess, here they are. The patriotic millionaires for fiscal strength now include 200 backstabbing liars, including more than a dozen current and former Google employees, gee, I wonder why them, actress Edie Falco, the failed actress who plays the junkie nurse Jackie, the founder of Esprit, the founder of the Princeton Review, the founder of Ask.com, philanthropist Michael Steinhardt, whoever he is, Rubini the economist, Andrew Tobias, never heard of him, and executives from Warburg Pincus and other major financial firms. The fact of the matter is all of these people have special interests. So now we are having Occupy in the Congress. It says only, I don't want to go into this. It's a nightmare to look at this. There's no such thing as patriotic millionaires. These are far leftists trying to destroy the country. All right, last night there was a report on 60 Minutes about soft corruption in Congress featuring Nancy Pelosi. What's that all about? Pelosi and her husband participated in an IPO, initial public offering of Visa stock in 2008, according to CBS. What did they do? They bought 5,000 shares at the time for $44. 2 days later, shares in Visa were selling at $64, according to CBS. What does this have to do with Nancy Pelosi? CBS reported the investment came at the same time a piece of legislation that was being opposed by credit card companies, was making its way through the House, and that Nancy Pelosi made sure it never saw the light of day. She, of course, fires back at 60 Minutes, saying it's not true. What would you expect her to say? She's the richest woman in Congress. She didn't get there by being stupid or meek, did you? Let's see what else is in the news today on the Savage Nation and elsewhere. All of this on michaelsavage.com. Newt is moving up, apparently. That's the worst thing that could ever happen to the Republicans. A disaster. And, of course, CNN is reporting this in their poll because they'd love to see Newt Gingrich facing Obama. Obama would win by 30 points. You understand how this works? Chelsea Clinton hired at NBC Nightly News. Government media complex. Beware the government media complex, said Michael Savage in 1998.
When you heard him refer to her as Princess Nancy, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was a pretty callous, sexist throwaway line that that demonstrates one more example of how deficient the entire Republican presidential field is.
Who do you believe, Herman Cain or those four women making those accusations?
You know, I think it stretches credulity for four different women who have nothing to do with each other to suggest that that the allegations aren't credible and real. They're very serious allegations, and I think Herman Cain needs to come clean and address them. There is a clearly deficient field, and Republicans have been left wanting because there's no quality candidate that that really is going to be able to go head-to-head with Barack Obama.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians? AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to americaisrising.com, 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. on MichaelSavage.com, crush capitalism. Capitalism kills, destroys the environment, say communist teachers. Of course, let's see how teachers live in Venezuela or in the other communist countries. Supreme Court will hear Obamacare case. Hey, incidentally, abuse of power, buy your first printing while copies last. The first printing is almost sold out. If you haven't read it yet and you intend to buy it for the holidays, do so now. You can order it at your local bookstore or on Amazon.com. If you want a free chapter, go to MichaelSavage.com. Cain tells Savage Nation, no VP slot for me. Listen to Savage's interview with Herman Cain again. It's on the website. The judge who freed the coach, Jerry Sandusky, on unsecured bail, volunteers for Sandusky's charity. Obama called America lazy while out on the road. Once again, there we go. Well, no wonder we're lazy. We read that he awarded a $433 million bogus drug deal to a donor. Oh, you didn't hear about that one? You were busy studying the Olympics? Today we are talking about many of these topics on the Savage Nation. And we're also looking at Barack Obama's psychology. Why, for example, does he stab America in the back whenever he goes to the third world? According to some websites, Obama's family tree is replete with the unbalanced. His maternal great-grandmother committed suicide. His grandfather, Stanley Dunham, was particularly unhinged. Expelled from high school for punching his principal. Named his daughter Stanley because he wanted a boy. And exposed young Barry to drunken trash talk. Barack Sr. was an abusive, alcoholic bigamist. What effect did this have on Barack Obama himself? Why, nothing if you're a leftist. That's all normal behavior. Now, there's others. Psychological profiles of Barack Obama. The reason we're looking into this is because our president goes on the road, and when he's far away from home, he seems to attack America. This time he called the country lazy. All this and more on Michael Savage right now.
Savage.
Life is a series of terrors with an occasional plateau of happiness and beauty. If anyone tells you it's the other way around, they're lying to you or they're drug addicts. Life is terrifying. You know what real life is? It's a holy terror. That's why you're born screaming and you die screaming. Do you understand that? Do you understand that, mister? That life is not what the teacher told you. Life is not what these freaks in America are trying to teach your children. Life is a nightmare. It's horrible. That's why you're born screaming. That's why you die screaming. But occasionally, as I said, there is a brief respite here and there. I had one last night. And the tougher you make your kid, the happier your kid's going to be. And the tougher you raise the kid, the happier his life is going to be. And the softer you make your son, the worse his life is going to be. The softer you make your son, the more he's going to be stepped on and turned into a worm. We had a heat wave out here in Northern California for three, four days. And that's what it comes like. And, you know, you live with it. I got air conditioning. I remember when I first moved out here, oh, no, we don't have air conditioning out in these parts. Our fog is on natural air conditioning. Yeah, all right, you're smart, are you smoking? I don't know about you, but I can't take the heat. So I got air conditioning in every house I own. I can turn it into a refrigerator wherever I am. We used to call it Indian summer, but we're not allowed to call it that anymore, so we'll call it Native American summer. We had a Native American summer night. Hot, beautiful. So I figured, you know what, I'm going to fire up the old 65 Caddy convertible. And strangely enough, I bought this car in 1994 when I started in radio. It had 52,000 miles on it. It's red. It's 19 feet, 6 inches long. You know, it's from an era in America that I can remember very well. My father was still alive. It was a different world, right? The windows are almost a half an inch thick on the car. But I keep it in the garage. I never drive it, right? I keep a battery charge, trickle charger. Of all the cars you own, I mean, I own some exotic cars, I got to tell you. I'm not here to boast about them, but I do. I'm a machinery lover. It's funny, I mean, given my background and my orientation towards nature, I still love machinery in that I'm a true American in that sense. I grew up in the age of the machine and the engine, and I still love engines. I'm not apologizing about it. In fact, all the freaks who bicycle around here all bring their bikes around with machines and engines. But let's not go there, okay? So I get the car. I bring it down to the house. I have it in the garage. And, you know, I have a dog, Teddy, a 10, 12-pound poodle. He's played as Eddie in my novel, Abuse of Power. He's the show dog. He's the clown. He's 7 years old. He's the joy of my life. Then I have a freak dog, like a retard, Tasha. She's about 5 years old and, like, does nothing for you. Everything is take, take, take. She's like a bad sister-in-law, you know what I'm saying? Or a relative you left behind in Brooklyn. Bitter, nasty, always subissiner, you know, nothing good to say, always sitting at, and she's nasty. All she wants is food. But we like her, and we take care of her. Teddy's the show dog. She's the dummy. You know how, like, for a horse, you get a goat. Tasha was got to be Teddy's goat, but she doesn't even do that right. All she does is, like, sit around. So I get a surprise last night. I honked the horn to pick up Mrs. S, and she says, I have a surprise for you. I said, what? She said, I got a new dog. I said, oh, God, no. So she got a Havanese, and she named it Toby. So now there's Teddy, Tasha, and Toby. So I said, what am I going to do, get mad? She got a dog? I don't even know what a Havanese is. I said, why not another small? Never mind, I got a Havanese. They're the cutest little thing. They're from Cuba, native to Cuba, which is good because I love Cuban music. And this is, of course, way before the communists destroyed Cuba. There was a nation called Cuba. It's thought that the dogs came from the Canary Islands. Sabor! Okay, good. Beautiful cutting, guys. You're the best. So the Havanese apparently is a lap dog from Cuba's aristocracy, which doesn't exist anymore. But they're very hardy, wonderful, playful little dogs. To make a long story short, he's only seven, I don't know how old he is. I don't know, 7 months? I don't know what he is. So you'd think Teddy and him get along great, right? All I said was, is he house trained? Yes. The first thing he did was pee on the wall. Okay, terrific. Great training, Joe. I'm glad to hear it. But I don't care. You know what I mean? I'd rather have a dog that pees on the wall than relatives of the kind. So I have Teddy, Tasha, and Toby. We pile him into the Cadillac. It's a hot night. What could I tell you? I go for a ride. I get on the highway. I shoot down to Sausalito, go around the waterfront. The car was running better than it's ever run for no reason. So she says to me, why is this car running better than it's ever run? It's smooth. You don't even hear this car. It's like a baby carriage. I own a Mercedes S600. It's a beautiful, incredible car. This thing is smoother, right? And has a certain suspension from the 60s that you can't beat. The dogs, it's a flat seat, right? No bucket seats. This is a flat bench seat. So the dogs love to sit between the two people. The top's down. They love the moon. They love the stars. They love the air. Dogs love the outdoors. And I said to myself, you know what I mean? This is it. This is what life is supposed to be. If you get 15 to 30 minutes of this once a year, you're ahead of the curve. It's not about skyrockets. It's not about getting stoned in a nightclub. It really isn't. Maybe it's about three dogs and a loyal companion in a Cadillac with the top down on a hot night. So that was one story. Now here's another story for you. The other day, I went down to Fisherman's Wharf, and I took a little bike ride. I don't eat down there no more because I just don't eat down there no more. But I went into a store that sells nautical items, nautical artifacts in San Francisco's Fisherman Wharf. You know, mixed in with the tourist dreck, the T-shirts. The guy is actually a store that sells real fisherman stuff. But he has artifacts, like nautical artifacts, steering wheels and ship models. So I like to poke around in there. I hadn't been in there in a year. The guy's a big Sicilian guy. He remembered me, of course, but I hadn't been in there in a year. I go in, so I'm touching this item, that. How much is this? How much is that? I see a pair of shoes, like size 16 shoes. Each shoe weighs 50 pounds, and it's next to a diving helmet. They're diving shoes. They're weighted. So I pick one up, and I struggle it over to the counter, and I say, how much do these Sicilian swimming shoes cost? He broke out in a big laugh. He got a kick out of that one. But I felt bad, so I bought a compass, a $20 compass. I could have bought it in probably a Target store for a buck. But, you know, I don't like to just go look around in a store and just be a deadbeat. You know, I told you, you go in a store, you buy something. But I thought the Sicilian swimming shoe thing was funny. So now I have Teddy, Tasha, and Toby. And that was it. And we stopped at a Thai restaurant that had an outdoor table in a parking lot. See, that's the problem with dogs. Once you have dogs, you no longer eat like a human being inside a restaurant with tablecloths. Now every decision is made upon who has an outdoor table that will let you bring dogs to the outside. So you're limited already. You're already eating in a marginal situation. But you know what? It's a trade-off. I'd rather see a dog next to me and a table that's a little shaky on a terrace, right? And it was dark already, than sit and listen to liberals inside discussing what a great man Obama is, you know, about how evil Nixon was. You know what I'm saying? So I'm eating. The dogs get nothing. What are you going to order a dog in a Thai restaurant? But I even figured that out by now. Wherever I go, you got to order something for a dog. So I said, can I order a side order of boiled chicken, no spices? Sure, for the dog. They probably charged me $8. I was afraid to look. But to tell you the truth, Toby and Teddy really liked that chicken. So that's my life today. Thank God it's not diver shoes. It's three dogs and a Cadillac. And now on that note, there's a moon out tonight, and I'll get back to regular programming on the Savage Nation. I can't wait to play with Toby tonight.
Motor cooled down, the heat went down, and that's when I heard that highway sound. Cadillac setting like a tornado, 110 a half a mile ahead. Cadillac looking like it's setting still, and I caught Maybelline at the top of the hill. Maybelline, why can't you be true? Oh, Maybelline.
It is Chuck Berry. When America was great, when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Yeah. Are we ever going to get this country back? Are we ever going to have an American in the White House?
Savage.
We hear Iran's on the verge of a nuclear weapon. Once again, we're hearing this rumor. Well, what should the U.S. and Israel do in response, if anything? And can we really trust Barack Obama to handle this extremely dangerous problem? I don't think so. Joining us to talk about this is the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and the founder of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, David Rubin. David Rubin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great to talk to you.
So what should the U.S. policy be towards Iran? I mean, realistically.
I think that the United States has to make it very clear that nuclear weapons in the hands of Iran are a mortal danger, not just to Israel, but to the world. We're talking about a situation that is very similar to the situation in 1930s Germany, where Adolf Hitler used the democratic freedoms of Germany to attain power in Germany, and he was threatening the entire free world at that point. Roosevelt was reluctant to go in, and it wasn't until Pearl Harbor that there was no choice. We're in a situation today where Ahmadinejad is threatening Israel, is threatening the United States, is threatening the free world, and he's making it very clear that they are intensely involved in a nuclear race, a nuclear race with themselves, and that he's prepared to use nuclear weapons against Israel and against the free world. So the question is, will Obama stand up and be a bold leader like Winston Churchill was and say that we have to attack, that we have to do what needs to be done? If he's not prepared to do it, then I will guarantee you that Israel is prepared to do the job.
With the recent atomic energy report that Iran is in the advanced stages of a nuclear program, what is the mood of Israel right now? And really, is Iran that close to gaining a nuclear weapon?
I would say that it's just a question of about 6 months. There are varying estimates, but we're talking about a matter of months, not a matter of a year or two. It's going to be a lot sooner, most likely. And it's essential that Israel or any other Western country that has the boldness and the self-interest to do so should take action sooner rather than later. It's been clear to Israel for a long time that the Iranians are arming, are working on nuclear weapons, are planning to use them against Israel once they have them. This hasn't been a secret to Israel for years, even when the previous report came out by the American intelligence services back in 2007, falsely claiming that the Iranians were not intensely involved in a nuclear weapons program. The Israelis never believed that. The Israelis never believed that to be true. We've always understood that this is a weapons program. There was never a question about that for us. So when the IAEA report came out, it didn't come as a surprise to anybody. But it did give a feeling of imminence of an impending nuclear attack against Israel, and the pressure on the prime minister in Israel has become greater to take action.
Okay, level with us. Is an Israeli attack on Iran imminent? Should Israel attack Iran to begin with?
Well, I believe that number one, Israel clearly is going to have to attack Iran if the American administration doesn't do it. There are many people in the American administration that have been pressuring the prime minister not to take action and have been pressuring Israel not to take action. And the reason being that perhaps it would cause a conflagration throughout the Middle East and around the world, and terrorism will be increased and all this other stuff. But the reality is that terrorism is going to be there either way. The more serious question is not whether there is going to be terrorism as a result of the Israeli attack and whether there is going to be a massive multi-front war as a result of an Israeli attack. The question is, what would happen if we allowed the Iranian madmen and Ayatollahs go ahead and have a nuclear weapon? That would be a danger for the entire world. And it's not just Ahmadinejad, by the way, that we're talking about here. We're talking about the Iranian opposition as well, which came out with a statement today via Mohammad Khatami, the leader of the opposition in Iran, that if there is any kind of nuclear and any kind of attack against Iran's nuclear program, that he is going to stand side by side, and they are going to be standing side by side with Ahmadinejad. So a regime change is not the answer in Iran and wouldn't solve the problem.
Moreover, what would an Israeli attack on Iran mean for the Middle East?
Well, as I've said, there has been widespread terrorism throughout the Middle East. I mean, all you have to do is take a walk through my neighborhood and in Shiloh, Israel, and you just come to house after house after house that has lost children in terror attacks. The reality is that I established my organization, the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, to respond to that terrorism that has been so widespread. So we know about the terrorism. I don't think that an Israeli attack on Iran would cause more terrorism. I do believe that it would cause an attack from Hezbollah in Lebanon. And therefore, if Israel was to attack Iran, then it would need to be a multiple attack, and it would need to be an attack on Hezbollah as well to be preemptive and to prevent Hezbollah from attacking Israel at the same time.
Does the Palestinian bid for statehood play a role in all of this?
Oh, I don't believe so. I think that we're talking about two separate issues here. The Palestinian bid for statehood at the UN has been encouraged, however, by the lack of non-action on Iran. And any time that the Palestinian Authority and their, which consists of two terrorist organizations, the Hamas and the Fatah, any time that they see weakness or appeasement on the part of the American president or on the part of the Israeli prime minister, they take it as a signal that they should go ahead and be bolder and more aggressive in their demands. I actually think that Herman Cain had it right when he referred to the so-called Palestinians being encouraged by Obama's appeasement. When they see appeasement, and this is how it works in the Islamic world, when they see appeasement, they take it as a message that they should move forward, become more aggressive. It's just the opposite of what people think in the West, that if we extend a hand in peace, then the hand in peace will be extended back to us. That's not how it works. And as I explained in my book, The Islamic Tsunami, in great detail, when you extend a hand in appeasement to the Islamic world, that hand will be cut off. When you show strength, then you will be respected.
What responses can we expect from the Islamic nations and terrorist organizations like Hezbollah if Israel does strike Iran?
Well, I'll tell you this. Most of the Islamic nations will take the position and have taken the position that there should not be any kind of attack on Iran. They make an outward front of unity, of Islamic unity on the surface. But behind the scenes, much of the Islamic world is in favor of an attack on Iran because they fear an Iranian nuclear program. There is competition between the Shiites and the Sunni Muslims, the Shiites being Iran and Lebanon and Syria, and between them and the Sunnis, which are represented by Saudi Arabia and Egypt and Libya and countries like that. So there is that internal competition. Most of those Sunni Muslim countries would be very happy to see an Israeli attack on Iran. They would scream and yell about it, but they would be very happy, and they probably would not take action against Israel or against the West.
David Rubin, thanks for being with us today on The Savage Nation.
It was good to talk to you again, Michael. The book is available on Amazon.com, The Islamic Tsunami.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
We are not done yet. In the weeks ahead, they're going to get a chance to vote on whether we give a tax cut to virtually every small business owner in America, including 900,000 women. These are folks who run the restaurants and stores and beauty shops and other small businesses that create two-thirds of all new jobs. There's no reason they shouldn't get a break. The American people are with me on this. And Republicans in Congress should be with me, too, because it's right for the country. Instead, they're spending time focusing on how to turn back the clock. Instead of figuring out how to put more Americans back to work, they've been trying to figure out how to take away preventive care that is covered under the Affordable Care Act. Instead of making life easier for women in this country, they want to let insurance companies go back to charging higher prices just because you're a woman. Instead of working to boost our economy, they're out there spending time trying to defund Planned Parenthood and prevent millions of women from getting basic health care that they desperately need. Pap smears and breast exams.
Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. New York, WOR, Anthony, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, how are you? It's good to talk to you. I was driving the other night listening to you. I've been listening to you for years, and I realized that probably 50% or more of what you say, I don't even agree with, and yet I can't stop listening to you for some reason. I mean, I just podcast every day. I make my father listen. I make my friends listen. I repeat your stuff verbatim as best I can. I listen to your
show. So without going into a litmus test and, you know, the normal radio thing of what don't you agree with, and we don't have to go down that road, Anthony, there's a reason you listen to me. It's because anyone who speaks with such force and self-assurance is worth listening to. That's number one. And you're not used to it in a world where everyone minces words and everyone tells you a little BS in order to get by. I think that's what it comes down to. In a way, I maybe sound like, you know, someone from your father or grandfather's generation probably, right?
Well, Michael, I'm searching for reality. I'm searching for somebody real who's going to just say the truth.
Well, hey, that's a funny line. Well, look at this. Here's a country filled with reality shows that are all fake. Think about it. You know, think about it. There's not a reality show that's real. They're all fake. You're telling me that, let's take Mob Wives. You see the girl sitting in a diner in Brooklyn. You're telling me that's who they really are, putting on that act over the coffee with the sweet and low with the cigarette? That's not who they are. They're acting out a role because the cameras are rolling. You want to see who they really are? Visit them at midnight when nobody's around and they're in bed with the mascara on the pillowcase.
Absolutely, and I listened to you, Michael, religiously. I stumbled across you ranting one night and said, "What's this guy yelling about?" And I haven't stopped listening since. That's how.
Well,
I found.
So you don't agree with some of the things, but you understand that a man should be listened to who has such self-assurance. But you certainly agree with me when I say borders, language, and culture, don't you?
Absolutely.
All right. So the rest doesn't even matter. To me, it's borders, language, and culture, first, last, and always. And if I ever ran for office, which I will never do, my platform would be very simple. Borders, language, and culture. You put me on a platform with all the Republicans put together, I could put them in one hand and run rings around them, but I would run right over the moderator. You think I would let a left-wing moderator like Wolf Blitzer or one of those other little Lilliputians tell me what I could say and can't say? I wouldn't listen to him. I would tell him to take a walk because the people want to hear me, not him. Who authorized these people to run these debates? What Republican in his right mind would walk into a debate run by Wolf Blitzer without expecting it to be skewed in such a way that they look bad? Now they're talking about Mr. Texas Governor's rock on his ranch. You heard about that fake scandal, right?
I hear anything you talk about is my
unbelievable view. But they're not talking about the $735 million given out last week on another solar scam. That somehow didn't make it to the local news. That didn't make it to NBC. I heard, by the way, David Gregory stole a line from me last week when he said Cain is Abel. Did you hear that one?
Yes.
Yeah, they all steal from me, and they make believe they don't know who they took it from. But let me tell you something. They're all listening to this show like you are. That's the bottom line here. Anthony, you heard the report that just came out earlier on the show about the streaming? Streaming is mainly a younger guy thing. Most of the people my age still listen on the radio, but streaming is the younger guy way to listen to radio. I'm number two in the streaming world. How'd that happen? If I don't exist, don't exist, not on TV, banned in Fox, banned in Britain, you never hear him, never see him, never heard of him. How come they're listening to me, Anthony? Same reason you are.
And I need that streaming to get your last hour of your show in New York, Michael. I look for
it. I get it. Well, I'm very glad to have WOR for the 2 hours that we have. Now, I'm going to send you a free gift if you can name it. What is it?
Abuse of power. I can't
Bingo!
Wait.
You're a winner! Joe! In Albany, New York, you're on the Savage Nation. Joe, what's on your mind?
Hi, Mike. I got two copies of your book. You sent me two. But I wanted to tell you that back in 72, I was still married then. I'm no longer. But I went up to a friend who was a very close friend of Jack Kerouac's up near Albany.
Oh, wow.
His name, right? And I was a little young to appreciate it, but he played for about 3 or 4 hours some tapes I don't believe they were ever published of Jack doing this thing, and they reminded me your brief wives and your liberal derrieres, those I don't know what to call them when you reveal what's inside. They reminded me of that. Except I know.
Well, in my case, I would say if Jack Kerouac had written them, which he didn't, you could call them ejaculations. But in my case, you couldn't call them by such a name. You could call them esavulations, if you wish.
Uh-huh.
No, that turn of phrase that I came up with, the brief wives, when the two guys are walking and they run into the old cop from San Francisco, I thought that was amazing, and it was based upon a true conversation I had with someone. I had to work it into the novel. It was really fun to write that. Well, Kerouac was one of my literary heroes. There's no question. When I read On the Road, it changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. Were it not for Jack Kerouac, I'd probably be a dead dentist in New York. I would have been dead 15 years ago. I would have had a dental practice, married a fat person, someone fat at birth. There's nothing against being fat. But I would have had a miserable, horrendous life as a dentist somewhere in Queens. Play the accordion in the basement probably once, and then died probably at 47 years old of heart failure.
Well, you know, I've learned a lot from listening to you, Mike, for the past 10 years. Like, I never knew what a schmo was until I finally listened to you. That sewing machine.
I'm sorry. I'm still laughing at my own observation that I would have died of heart failure, because I actually used the word heart failure instead of a heart attack. Do you know why, Joe?
Why?
Why would I, as a dentist, have died of heart failure rather than a heart attack? Because the guy would have died because heart failure. He would have been a failure as a human being, and his heart just would have stopped beating. Different than a heart attack. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Maybe I'll think about it and send you another. And you have two. You can't get another one. Can I read you at the dog show something about dogs and Napoleon, which I think you'll all enjoy hearing from, from my book, Abuse of Power? May I read this to you? It's a short paragraph. It's about Napoleon, so it's political. So they're at the dog show, and Jack Hatfield's talking to the senator. And one of them says, did you know that a Newfoundland once saved Napoleon Bonaparte from drowning when he fell off a ship? Napoleon didn't know how to swim, but Newfoundlands are notorious for their affinity with water. After the rescue, Napoleon himself is supposed to have said, here, gentlemen, a dog teaches us a lesson in humanity. Wickham chuckled, indeed. Loyalty, Wickham went on, that's what it's all about. You know the story about Greyfriars Bobby, don't you, Jack? Jack nodded, but the senator pointed to a waiting group of Skye Terriers and continued. Greyfriars became famous in 19th century Edinburgh after reportedly spending 14 years guarding over the grave of his owner, John Grey. A year after this loyal little dog died himself, in 1873, a statue and fountain were built in the Scottish capital to remember him. I know the story well, Jack said with a nod, from the 1961 Disney film about that angel with fur called Greyfriars Bobby. Wickham smiled warmly. Saw it as a boy, made me what I am today. I don't just mean the dog lover. I mean the concept of loyalty, dedication, no matter the inconvenience or cost. Without it, you're nothing. Jack was enjoying the conversation, but had more pressing matters on his mind. Senator, we need to talk about the hand of Allah.
Savage.